Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. According to the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, in any given month, about 4,000 Americans will commit suicide. Young people are particularly vulnerable. For the age range of 10 to 34, suicide is the second leading cause of death. A new study from the University of Florida finds that suicide rates among young people are higher than previously reported, and that suicide among young women is much higher than we thought. Dr. Binyu is a doctoral student in epidemiology at the University of Florida. He co-authored the study, and he joins us now. Dr. Yu, thank you so much for the time.
Thank you for having me.
What raised your concerns about the suicide rates in the United States? Why did you want to look into this?
I think first I want to the audience to know that the life expectancy in the United States has been decreasing the past 3 years. And there's two main reasons. One of them is suicide. Another one is substance use overdose death.
All right. And so, go ahead, continue. I'm sorry.
And also, according to the data from the WHO, that the global trend of suicide is decreasing, but in the United States, it has been increasing for 20 years, since 1999.
What is the CDC, the Center for Disease Control's, approach to counting suicide rates in this country? Because this is part of the study. There was an issue with the way those numbers were being counted.
The data, they use the international classification of diagnosis to classify the death, if the death is suicide or not, according to the ICD-10 code.
Okay, why did you want to take a different approach to the measurement?
This is the measurement is standardized measurement to classify the causes of death when one person reported it to the system.
So this is a
standard approach and the protocol to report a death.
I see. Why is it important to use the cohort analysis, which includes the risk of suicide in the years that you're studying?
The analysis, the full name is the age period and the cohort modeling. Because in previous studies, people may use the age standardized rate to see the time trend, which only adjusted the age structure. But the birth cohort, which is the people when they were born, also influence the risk of suicide. If we did not control the birth cohort, the estimated rate may not be accurate. And in our study, we find that after controlling the age structure and the V-shaped birth cohort effect, the suicide rate for females is higher than we previously reported.
Yeah, so the suicide rate for women, young women, is higher than we thought. The thinking was for many years that for men it was much higher than it was for women. What was the one thing that jumped out at you that showed why that number is not accurate, why there are more young women committing suicide than we originally believed?
First, because if we use original reported data, which is not accurate, if we cannot control for the birth cohort, because in the birth cohort, we can see there is a V-shaped birth cohort effect. For people who born before 1995, they are experiencing the decreasing of the risk of suicide. But for people they born after 1995, they're experiencing increased risk of suicide.
Okay, so the cohort again is when these people are born, and we're finding that the study found that people born, as you said, after 1995 have a higher rate, that basically the era that you were born in says something about what the rates are, and the rates for younger people, those born after 1995, seem higher. How do you hope this information is going to help individuals, especially when it comes to counseling?
Yeah, when I do the research, I find that the people who born after 1995, when they enter their adolescence, they are more likely to be exposed to internet and social media. And one of my study going on and has not published yet, we figured out a U-shape of the relationship between the internet use and the risk of suicide. And if the young people, they use 1 hour of the internet, it has the lowest risk of suicide. But with the increase of the internet use, then the risk of suicide is also increasing. So I think parents may consider about taking some actions to limit the over access of internet for their children.
That is very interesting. So the internet plays a role on some level, and that's around the time after 1995 when we start to see really the internet start to mature and grow, and things, social media wasn't still wasn't around even yet, but things started to change around that era. Dr. Bin Yu, again, a doctoral student in epidemiology at UF's College of Public Health, he co-authored a new report which finds a higher rate of suicide for young people than previously reported, especially amongst young women. Dr. Yu, I really appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So again, you know, suicide is a really difficult topic for parents to talk with their kids. And as part of Suicide Awareness Month, the National Association of Mental Illness is spreading the word about how parents can best have these difficult conversations with their loved ones. And of course, look for warning signs. I want to bring in two guests joining me here in studio. Dr. Anna Shustak is a licensed clinical social worker and on the board of directors at NAMI and joins us now. Dr. Shustak, thank you so much for the time. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Also joining us is Patricia Timmerman Barbosa da Silva, Executive Director of Advocate to Create and a licensed mental health counselor. Patricia, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us here.
Dr. Shustak, I want to start with you. Did it shock you when you saw those numbers that the rate amongst young people is growing, but especially for young women?
Mm-hmm.
What did you think when you saw that?
Well, I guess I have mixed feelings. I certainly know that the death by suicide is very high for young adults. Particularly children between 15 and 24. I guess I am somewhat surprised that that this is potentially worse for young girls than we thought. But then when you think about the effects of social media, isolation, many different social problems, girls are in the same boat as boys in terms of the effects, you know, of circumstances on them. So clearly we have to do a better job reaching out.
Is there anything that you would think may be part of the reason why there are more young women committing suicide than we thought originally? I mean, what do you think social media may or the internet may be doing to them differently than it is to young men?
That's a tough one. I would say that they certainly young girls socializing with other young with friends is very important to them, and I think that might be more difficult for them in that they are withdrawn and in places where they wouldn't be able to have contact. I don't know. I do you have some feelings about that?
Yeah. Mrs. Timmerman, what about you? What do you think about that whole idea?
We've known for a while that there's a higher rate of suicidal attempts by women as compared to men, but of death by suicide, men has been higher than women. A lot of the times we talked about lethality, the means that have been used. So it seems one of the things, and is an assumption here, is that the means being used now by females are being more lethal as compared to what was before. But one of the things that I would say with the increase in social media, and I mean, I think that there are positives and negatives about social media, and isolation is one of them, and we'll talk about them in a little bit, but it's the scrutinization, right? So I think we live in a world where males in our society, they've always been kind of not talking a lot about their emotionality, so, right? And you're born in a place where you learn to not talk so much about it, whereas for females, we are chastised in a way for being so emotional, and I think we're very scrutinized physically what we look like, and different from when I was going to school, and I'm a millennial, but in a different way, because Facebook just came when I was going to college. But before, if there was bullying going on or things going on, you go home and it would stop because, you know, now we go home and you go to your other social gatherings, whereas now it follows you 24/7. There is no stop. Whatever happens in school, wherever you are, or there is any scrutinization or any bullying or being mean or demeaning, it follows you wherever you are. If you have a phone, you're always looking at it.
Yeah. You talk to survivors, and these are people who are related to those who do commit suicide. What do they tell you about what they've learned from their experiences?
So, yes, so survivors of suicide, which is an interesting name because you always think it's the person who has attempted, right. But survivors in the grief world are people surviving the loss of a loved one. And the word surviving is really imperative because you learn to exist. Your time is very different from those around you. It feels like it just happened yesterday. And a lot of the things that I hear a lot is now I see everything that I didn't see before. Now I can see the blank stare in their eyes that I didn't see before. When we talk about depression, and I say depression is very different, just like different kinds of cancers, they do different things to your body. Depression is very similar in that there are some that are constant and people learn to live with it, and there are some that go peak and go down and up and down. And one of the things that I hear a lot from parents or siblings or spouses is I see their sadness, and now I have a really difficult time knowing if when they were happy, if they were truly happy, or if they had a mask on for us. So that's one of the things that I hear.
They were wearing a mask. They were hiding those emotions, trying not to let anybody know what was going on.
Yeah, and that blank stare of not seeing and the pain that the parents and siblings are so on. They're like, I wish that their pain wasn't there and I could have done something.
Right. I would agree with that. I think also a lot of times parents are, just hoping the problems will go away and that maybe if the child tries hard enough, things will get better and that it's not really as serious, you know, that it's going to be correctable.
So I think
there's a little denial in there as well. And a lot of that is because they too feel very isolated and stigmatized by the world we live in, which is to not be very supportive of people with mental illness.
So I think about what Dr. Yu told us and how, you know, part of the study was finding that, you know, really a big part of what may be determining why suicide rates are higher amongst young people is the era that you grew up in. And so he's saying after 1995, and then you think about, yeah, how that's when the internet kind of changed, then you get into the aughts, and that's when social media pops up. And I don't know, I'm thinking about when I was growing up as a kid in the 80s, parents still didn't talk about this. We barely ever discussed it, but there was still bullying. Mm-hmm. But it was, I think, as you said, it was a little bit different, Patricia, is that it didn't follow you around. But so let's talk about parents, though. And like you said, hindsight, Patricia, it's like that hindsight, like, well, now I see it. But so Dr. Shustak, I'll start with you. Where do you start?
Parents can't do it alone. Okay. I mean, my feeling is parents need support.
Okay. But where do you start with parents? How do you start helping them to even begin the process?
Well, I mean, it depends. If you're talking one-on-one, let's say counselor, therapist to parent, you would want to have them open up about what they see going on so that you could share with them what you see as maybe problematic. But I'm seeing it also as a question of allying with teachers. For example, NAMI, we're about to start a program called Ending the Silence in the high schools for students, where parents and teachers will work together on identifying students who may be at risk and trying to reach out to those kids. The most important thing that can help a child is that their parent can take them for the therapeutic help that they need. That really can't be almost anybody else but the parent, because the parent will have an active role in making sure that's done. So you need to have trust, and you need to have, you know, and there needs to be, I guess, again, less fear about bringing this out in the open. It's not contagious because you talk about it. Do you know?
Right. And so, I wonder, like, when do you even start the conversation? Because, I mean, they've got suicides they've tracked to 10-year-olds. When do you even begin? And is it something that you even start the conversation? Or
I would.
Again, do you think it's something with
a therapist?
I would
start that conversation with the parent of a young child. I mean, that's the place to make the early intervention is how you can potentially have an impact on avoiding any attempts.
With kids, think about this. Their context is watching cartoons where the cartoon dies and what happens afterwards, they're back to life. So the idea of death is very different. So it's a very different context.
Correctable.
Exactly. And so it's being able to talk about that. And there was something that was happening. And I remember listening, and probably in NPR and WLRN, which was death and dining, and to be able to talk about death. And one of the things that parents talk about with me a lot is I wish in parenting books they would have this information. But it is being able to bring up the conversation of death. And talk about it and leaving it open. People are very afraid of thinking, if I say suicide, I'm giving the idea. That's not the case. The idea is already in there, in your mind somewhere, for it to... it doesn't formulate just because I talk to you about it. But one of the things, we talk about change, right? So any change in behavior elicits a question. So if you see somebody giving away their belongings, things that they...
How do you know when you talk about... That's interesting. How do you know the difference between... you see somebody who's changing in their behavior. And again, if it's someone very young, part of that may just be they're going through puberty. So there's a lot of changes going on anyway. Mm-hmm. So how do you separate the two? You know, like, okay, wait a minute. They're growing up, or wait, something's wrong.
Well, I see one part being a combination of changes in the behavior and in the whole outlook of the child. But using a young child as an example, a young child who will say run into the street in front of a car while the car is moving, that would be a sign that that child might be contemplating suicide, because that's one of the first things we learn, right? Is don't run into the street. But if you're looking at a combination of things like they isolate themselves, don't want to be with their friends. Having eating and sleeping difficulties,
giving away
their things, themes of death, like talking all the time about, oh, I wish I was dead. That's another thing I wanted to say is particularly adolescents, but also young children often feel very guilty, and they feel that they're a burden to their families. Mm-hmm. And they will say and articulate, I'm no good to anybody. I might as well just be gone because I can't really provide anything.
And one of the things, so we talked a little bit about depression, isolation. I say that depression is like a vampire, is very seductive. It tells you, I'm your only friend, no one wants to be with you, and it loves the darkness. And one of the biggest kryptonites or enemies of depression is social interaction. So when we're talking about social media, and I love the idea of balance. I talk about cognitive balance. You know, if you think of a worst case scenario, also think of the best, so there can be a cognitive balance. Also a balance between social media and socialization. Mm-hmm. So it's not about taking away the social media, because it is entrenched in our culture today, but it is having a little bit of both. Mm. Because what social media is doing a lot, it's great because we get to connect to so many people, but are those connections true connections? You can have 500 friends on Facebook, but you really only know two or three. So making sure that there is a balance, right, between the two, because that social interaction is what allows you to know you're not alone.
Mm-hmm. Again, I'm talking with Patricia Timmerman Barbosa da Silva, Executive Director of Advocate to Create, also a licensed mental health counselor, and Dr. Anna Shustak, a licensed clinical social worker, also on the board of directors of NAMI. And again, talking about this this recent study from the University of Florida that showed that suicide rates among young people, now the second leading cause of death, but what they found was suicide rates among young women much higher than we originally thought. And what we heard from Dr. Yu from UF was, in part of it is the era that people grew up in. And so this, with this younger group, anybody born after 1995, we're seeing those numbers increase. And we're wondering, what's the connection between that, maybe perhaps, and social media and the internet? Not to say that's the only reason. Suicide's been an issue for, and still is an issue for, a lot of people of a lot of ages, many generations. Mrs. And I've been calling you Timmerman Barbosa or Mrs. da Silva?
Barbosa da Silva.
Mrs. da Silva. I want to make sure I get it right. Real quickly, is you said earlier too about family members, survivors, will later say, I should have seen the signs. They were there right in front of me. But hindsight's 20/20. So what do you talk to them about? What do you talk to parents about what those signs are, so that you're not thinking about that later, that you spot it first?
So that's really hard to...
And you guys were mentioning this a little bit just a moment ago.
Yeah, but it is really hard to say, because one of the things with suicide is there isn't a cause or a person or something to blame. So we blame ourselves, which is why we look at everything that we didn't see. But we only know what we know and not a moment before. but it is allowing... So if the teenager is talking to you, having a conversation with them, or the youth, about not only suicide, but if you're having difficulties to be able to give me a cue between when it is social dramatization, right? Oh my God, I want to kill myself because I am really frustrated versus when I'm actually having thoughts of suicide. So what I would say for parents is to become aware and look at different organizations like NAMI, FISP, the Florida Initiative for Suicide Prevention, to learn how to converse with kids, but to talk to them. So then the child learns a language with you as to when I need help versus when I'm just venting. Because that becomes a problem. Because if I say, well, if a child says, I want to kill myself, and right away you're going to run to be correct them, they might be just venting. So it's understanding that difference.
Yeah, and Dr. Shustak, how do you tell the difference? How do you tell the difference when somebody's having a really bad day? And maybe it's just a form of expression. Sometimes people say things that are kind of weird between that and, well, okay, but there's a real problem.
I think ongoing behavior and behavior that gets, that gets more exaggerated and more problematic. And I also think that parents, in respect to the other question before that, parents need to validate their child and their child's experience as opposed to sort of doing the... pull up your bootstraps, you have a happy life, you should just go on with it, get on with it. You have to validate, and from doing that, you will have a more honest conversation and be able to tell, whether the level of depression is truly a level requiring professional help.
Mrs. De Silva, what programs have been effective, especially perhaps in schools, but what's been really effective in helping parents make that connection, and just not even parents, because it could be, again, not just young people, but anybody who needs help. What programs have really been effective in helping them get that help?
I think there have been so many. NAMI is one of them. They have a lot of groups when we talk about depression and mental health. There's actually the Florida Initiative for Suicide Prevention is doing, I remember the name, it's an event where you're talking about mental health, which is happening on October 19th. But it's being able to converse about this thing. So 2-on-1 does it, AFSP, FISP, it's being able to talk about it.
And you know what, Dr. Shustak, I've wanted to get this out before we finish up here, is when we in the news media discuss, we don't cover stories of suicide. And when we talk about it, it's always, we have to be very careful, because obviously it's a very difficult subject, and we don't want people who might be thinking about it to maybe feel like, you know what, this pushes them over. Mm-hmm. We have to be very sensitive about this. What do you suggest in how the news media, how media in general covers this issue? What should we be doing?
Mm-hmm. I think, the only way the only way we are ever going to be able to destigmatize this is by openly discussing depression and the fact that it's affecting our community. And I, again, bring up, our program of Ending the Silence, where we're taking two people into the schools, a young person who's in recovery from a mental illness, as well as an adult, and we're presenting all of the important issues, the warning signs, how you can reach out to help somebody, all the things that we can do to prevent a suicide. But just sweeping it under the carpet, I don't think is helpful. No. And I don't think that it's going to show the community that there's places that they can go to get the help they need.
She is Dr. Anna Shustak, licensed clinical social worker, and I'll get on the board of directors for the National Alliance of Mental Illness. Also, Patricia Timmerman Barbosa De Silva, executive director of Advocate to Create and a licensed mental health counselor. Thank you so much. I really appreciate the time.
Thank you for having us.
Also, earlier we heard from Dr. Bin Yu, doctoral student in epidemiology at the University of Florida's College of Public Health. They have a new study out now looking at this, and we'll have resources at WLRN.org. Also, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. That number is 800-273-8255. That's 800-273-8255. All right, still to come, we heard from Miami Beach Mayor. He wants to get a little bit tougher on medical marijuana. We'll explain what that is coming up next.